If it pleases the court, my name is Bernard Stretker. I work in the Scottsdale County Public Defender's Office. In our office, I was appointed to represent Mr. Cano Samoya on the case that is before this court today. On July 8, 2014, Mr. Cano was convicted by jury verdicts of one charge of third-degree sexual assault of a child, Class 3A felony, and three charges of first-degree sexual assault of a child more than 12 years of age but less than 16 years of age, those being Class 1B felonies. The charges were based on incidents that allegedly involved Mr. Cano and his niece, a PL. The third-degree sexual assault charge was alleged to have occurred sometime during the year 2008, and the other charges were alleged to have occurred during specified times from 2010 through December of 2012. Mr. Cano Samoya was sentenced to serve 1 to 3 years in prison with 197 days credit on the charge of third-degree sexual assault and three terms of 35 to 40 years imprisonment for the charges of first-degree sexual assault. He was given credit for 197 days already served on those sentences as well. The sentences were ordered to be served concurrently. It's from those convictions and sentences that Mr. Cano Samoya perfected his direct appeal to this court. We presented three issues for this court's consideration. One issue relates to the admission of testimony from PL as to uncharged conduct on the part of Mr. Cano Samoya. Another issue relates to the answer that the court gave to a jury question that was posed during deliberation. And our third issue deals with the sufficiency of the evidence presented at trial to support Mr. Cano's conviction. With respect to the first issue, it was during the direct examination of PL. She testified about an incident that occurred in Mr. Cano Samoya's home. It occurred at a time when she was in her cousin's bedroom alone picking up toys. She claimed that Mr. Cano Samoya came into the bedroom, approached her from behind, and rubbed her on the outside of her clothing.
What was your objection that you made to that evidence?
When the evidence came in, my objection was on materiality. And the court overruled that objection and
You didn't make a 404 objection?
No, I didn't.
And I mean, even if you did, isn't sexual conduct, prior sexual acts admissible under a separate section of the evidence rules?
I'm sorry, under?
Isn't sexual conduct or prior acts of sexual activity or assault admissible under our evidence rules? Is not a bad act, but is admissible, the prior conduct?
Well, I would submit that under our rules of evidence that defendants should be given notice that this kind of evidence is coming in. When this kind of evidence comes in during trial, and everyone's probably aware of it and experienced it,
Does it really make a whole lot of difference given that there were four counts of sexual assault and there was evidence of those sexual assaults occurring during the time? What would this fifth incident have done to the evidence or to the jury's opinion of innocence or guilt?
I think it was extremely prejudicial to Mr. Cano Samoya. I think it showed that, first of all, it's basically propensity, and I think it also shows that allowed the jury to infer that basically whenever Mr. Cano Samoya had an opportunity, he would abuse this girl, even if she was alone or not alone.
But your evidence, you made your objection at the time, and it was overruled.
But yes. Rubbing the outside of the clothes on the back?
I think it was on her buttocks. I think that's what the gist of it was.
Would it be wrong to characterize that as the least offensive of the incidents testified to?
I think it was, but it was allowed to come in after the girl had testified about the allegation of sexual contact. The incident occurred when the mother and aunt went to get
what?
That had already been testified to, and this was just basically.
Well, what about the jury instruction, or not the instruction, but the statement that the court made to the jury with regard to a question that they submitted while they were in deliberation.
Okay. Well, that's our second concern. And
but the court's statement isn't incorrect, is it? Time is not an element of these offenses. So the court statement is incorrect. Whether it actually answered the juror's question is another issue. But the trial court didn't make an error in stating that time is not an element of the offenses. That's a correct statement of the law, isn't it?
Well, I think when you talk about the cases that I read that talked about time, those are cases in these kind where basically allegations are made about the sufficiency of the charge and the information, whether or not the information adequately defines the time, or we're talking about situations where guys are complaining that it's so broad that I can't claim it as pleaded against a double jeopardy claim.
Okay. And as I understand, your third assignment of error is insufficiency of the evidence. Is that based on the fact that you're saying that the crimes that were allegedly committed as alleged in the information did not occur at those particular times, and that there wasn't evidence to establish that they occurred during the times that were alleged in the information?
Respect to the one charge, with respect to the charge of sexual conduct, I think that's true. Because basically what we have is we have a situation where, even from the question that was posed to the court, that jury was not convinced beyond a reasonable doubt that whatever had happened in the year 2008.
Well, so, aren't you taking that statement of the jury just a little too far? I mean, the jury said, so we can convict on this count if we believe the event happened. We don't know whether they believe the event happened. They just say if, right?
Well, I think by the fact that they're concerned about the date, and that's what they're concerned about.
We don't know how many of them were concerned about that. Maybe one of them was concerned, and the poor person is asking that question so the other 11 people will know what the answer is. I mean, we really don't know. That jury question doesn't tell us exactly what they were thinking, does it?
Well, I think there was the evidence, I think, was fairly clear that these people lived in Texas until at a point after the birth of their first child, and that was in February of 2009. Now, that was established at least a couple of times. Now, you know, people get cross-examined, people get confused, and they say, well, it might have been 2008, 2009, and I guess maybe that's something that the jury was struggling with.
Mr. Strechter, the victim did testify to four separate sexual assaults, didn't she?
Yes.
So there was evidence that she'd been sexually assaulted on four different occasions.
Yes.
Is it your point that wasn't sufficient to sustain a conviction, or the time that she testified that the assaults occurred weren't reasonably related to the counts charged in the information as the time alleged that they occurred in the information?
I think that that would apply to the charge of sexual contact. With respect to the other charges, we all understand what the role of the jury is. Their role is to hear the evidence, determine the facts, and that on appeal, when complaints about the sufficiency of evidence are made, this court doesn't interfere with that or reweigh the evidence, only if you can find as a matter of law that the evidence was wholly insubstantial.
Could a reasonable trier of fact have found that the defendant did, in fact, commit four separate sexual assaults upon the victim?
Well, Mr. Cano Samoya's concerns are that based on the inconsistencies of the testimony of the people that were involved, some of the circumstances surrounding these incidents, and all of those matters, that
his position was he didn't do it.
Right. And that that evidence was not sufficient to support his convictions.
Okay.
We thank the court for undertaking a review of this matter. We will accept the court's decision and guidance that the court provides to us in the event issues such as this come up in the future.
Thank you very much. Ms. Klein, good morning again.
May it please the court, Mr. Chief Justice. I'm Kimberly Klein, Assistant Attorney General, representing the state in this matter. Your Honor, I think I'd actually like to begin by talking about the sentence that was imposed by the district court and why we believe that it was the sentence imposed was actually erroneous. The defendant was sentenced to 35 to 40 years for each of three counts of first-degree sexual assault of a child, and the district court said they would all run concurrently and then said that 25 of those years would be a mandatory minimum before the good time statutes apply. And as I interpret what the district court was doing, it was looking at the provisions of 28.319.01 that talk about someone who has been previously convicted of the same offense. And as I read both that statute and as I interpret the similarly worded habitual criminal statute, this is actually an incorrect interpretation by the district court.
You're saying it's a mandatory minimum of 15 years?
That is my understanding, yeah. The 28.319.01 talks about someone who has been previously convicted. When you're simultaneously...
Before this case.
That's
is what you're
yes,
had your reading.
Right. And I don't think these are essentially simultaneous rather than previous. They're certainly not final convictions such that they would be susceptible of use as an enhancement, I don't think.
So you're arguing this is plain error on the sentence?
Well, yes,
what,
I guess it is.
It
was not raised, yeah. It was not raised. I think it is error appearing on the face of
the statute. Let me ask you. Technically, the trial court, when he was asked about a particular count, although the jury referred to it as an account, did the trial court, in fact, give a correct statement to the jury that time is not an element of sexual assault?
I think that's a correct statement.
I may not have answered the jury's question, but what the court said was correct, wasn't it?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
What happens when you have a situation in which the state alleges that this act or these counts of sexual assault occurred within a particular time frame and alleges that in the information and then proceeds to try the case and the evidence shows that some of these sexual assaults did not occur during the time frame that the state alleged in its information? Does that make a difference?
Well, I think...
In other words, I think the record will show that there are three counts here that proved that there was a sexual assault, but there's no evidence to show that it occurred within the time the state alleged in its information.
Well, I think the one count where it's alleged just to have occurred within 2008, there is testimony, and the evidence is... basically kind of all over the place. The defendant's wife testified that they had, in fact, returned to Nebraska in 2008, so they were...
But the victim did never testify that anything occurred to her in 2008. She never said that any sexual assault occurred in 2008. She testified that the sexual assaults occurred in 2010 through 2012 before her freshman year.
That's correct. She did not specifically reference the year 2000.
So if the state alleges that this sexual assault occurred in 2008 but never proves the assault occurred until 2010, is that a reasonable notice to the defendant of the charge?
I think it's certainly a problem because... Part of the reason for pleading the date is, and the reason that they've been given such wide latitude is so that in future...
Well, we've recognized, haven't we, that a range of dates is acceptable in the charging document?
Yes.
Okay, so you...
But doesn't it follow that the evidence must meet that range?
Yes, I think that it does.
Given that, are you saying that the evidence in this case met the ranges that were alleged within the information?
Well, on count one, the 2008 or all of them?
Well, I think the only one that's problematic is count one, where it alleged 2008. I think the evidence that something happened then is
the victim said never said there was any sexual assault in 2008. She said that assaults occurred in either 2010 through 2011 and before her freshman year.
That's correct.
That's important in establishing the ages of the victim at the time of the assaults and the age of the perpetrator at the time of the assaults. But does that evidence support the information that alleges a specific time and the evidence given by the victim doesn't meet those time frames alleged by the state? Except in the fourth count.
I'm sorry, except?
The fourth count.
Well, I think the ones where the dates are alleged, I think counts 2, 3, and 4, I think the evidence sufficiently supports those convictions based on the victim's testimony. I think count one where it alleges 2008 is the only really problematic one. And the evidence to...
Suppose the state said that the sexual assaults occurred between October and December of 2011. And the victim testifies that she was sexually assaulted in 2010. Does that information, can you sustain a conviction based on that information that alleged the sexual assault was in between October and December of 2011, and the victim says I was sexually assaulted in 2010?
Well, ideally what would happen would be the state would move to amend to conform to the evidence.
Yeah. The state could have done that.
The state could have done that, yes.
But didn't.
I think it is, I don't know that because time is not an essential element of the offense that I can say it would invalidate that particular conviction. I think
and then,
basically the timing operates to act as a prescriptive bar against future prosecutions. I think if you went back and looked, you would have to bar it from the date, you could go back and bar it from the date that was charged to whatever the furthest date
was. That would be a double jeopardy issue, but the defendant doesn't raise due process, does he?
No, that's correct.
So the defendant isn't arguing that he wasn't given proper notice of the time of the events in order to defend against the information?
Correct.
But if you had a situation where the state said it occurred in 2012 and the victim says it occurred in 2010, has the state proved its case?
I think because the time is not considered an element of the offense, I think it has proved its case.
So long as it still meets the other elements?
Yes, correct. So long as it meets the essential elements that were charged, and I think in this case it did. Your Honors, unless there are additional questions...
I think going back to this range concept, I think some of the commentary is ranges are, in the charging document, serve a number of purposes, and one of which is to inform the defendant of what range the evidence is going to be directed to, right?
Yes.
And also with the understanding what we know in real life, and which is that young victims don't have a good concept of time and so
Correct.
Forth.
Yes. Unless there are further questions, we would ask that the judgment and sentences be approved.
Thank you very much. Is there any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. We will go on then to the next case of the day, which is In Re Interest of Sloan O. We have two case numbers here.